Today is Mother's Day, and I thought we'd talk about one of our mothers, Mother Cal. In our Krishna consciousness culture, one of the most often repeated prayers, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Taya Chajigati Taya Krishnaya Go Vindaya Namo Namah. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable deity for all Brahminical men, who is the well-wisher of cows and Brahmins, and who is always benefiting the whole world. I offer my repeated obeisances to the personality of Godhead, known as Krishna or Govinda. It's said in the Vedas that we have seven mothers. There's our real mother, the wife of the spiritual master, the wife of the Brahmin, the wife of the king, the nurse, and the earth, as well as the cow. Most of us drink the milk from our real mother for 1 or 2 years in the beginning of our life, and then we cease. But we drink the milk of the cow throughout an entire life. Therefore, she's considered to be the mother. And the bull is the father of the living being. Cow is the mother because just as one sucks the breast of the mother, human society takes cow's milk. Similarly, the bull is the father of human society because the father earns for the children just as the bull tills the ground to produce food grains. Human society will kill its spirit of life by killing the father and the mother. And that's a quote from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter. See a picture here of the bull, two bulls, two oxen yoked up to the plow. Each one of them weighs 1,000 or 1,200 pounds, and they're tilling the earth to put food grains on the table. We always say, even in human society, father earns the bread, or the father puts the bread on the table. So the bull does the same thing. With his strength and stamina, he puts the bread on the table, and he's entitled to respect. Now, if you have a male cow, and you just don't train them, but you have to feed them, they will eat you out of house and home. So the important thing is to train them to pull and to plow, then they will pay their way and they'll be very happy to be able to contribute as well. This is a picture of New Vrindavan, our West Virginia community, in the wintertime when there's snow on the ground. And you see the two oxen there, they're pulling a sled of wood. They've gone out into the deep woods. The devotees have cut the wood and they're bringing it back for consumption in wood stoves. Also in the summer months, with wheels on it, there are ox carts, and those ox carts can be used to transport commodities. They can also be impressed during festival times to give like hay rides to the kids as well. One time Lord Chaitanya was having a debate with the Muslim magistrate there in Bengal, and Lord Chaitanya asked the Muslim magistrate, his name was the Qazi. He said, in human society, matricide and patricide are two of the most heinous crimes. Matricide means killing your mother, and patricide means killing your father. So in human society, is there any question that someone who's killed either their mother or father, what to speak of both, could ever be happy? And the Qazi said, well, no, of course not. I mean, you kill your mother and your father's, everything in your future is inauspicious. Everything is dark. So Lord Chaitanya said, the cow is your mother, the bull is your father. So how can you even begin to imagine anything about human society's future being bright when the mother and the father are killed? And Lord Chaitanya had to admit, the Qazi had to defer to Lord Chaitanya's logic. Lord Chaitanya himself was an incarnation of Krishna in the guise of a devotee. Krishna himself appeared 5,000 years ago as a cowherd boy, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared 500 years ago, 4,500 years later, as a Brahmin, which according to the social strata, the Brahmin is higher than the Vaishya, the commercial, the mercantile. So Lord Chaitanya once said, in order to highlight the importance of protecting the cows, in my last life, which means as Krishna, I accumulated unlimited pious credits by being a cowherd boy. Thus, in this life, I took birth in a family of Brahmins. So this is God speaking, and he's not governed by the laws of karma. But he's telling us, if you want to do good to yourself, if you want to sow seeds now, which will produce wonderful, positive results in the future, then just about the best thing you can do is to protect the cows, to give them their shelter and protection. And the worst thing you can do is to be the cause of their misery and suffering. What I like about the Vedas is they're so specific. They don't just talk vaguely or ambiguously about the kingdom of God. They describe it in specifics. And when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, many of his associates descended from the spiritual world with him, so that his pastimes on this earth reflected the pastimes of the spiritual world. And so here's some very specific information about how Krishna as he was exhibiting his adolescent pastimes in the rural village of Vrindavan, used to go out every day with his friends and take the calves to the pasturing grounds. It's well known that if you let the calf drink all of the mother cow's milk, the calf will get diarrhea, get sick, and die. So half of that milk is for human society, and half of the milk is for the calves. So the calves have to be separated from their mothers for part of the day so they won't drink too much milk. Therefore, the young boys of the villages would take the young calves out to the pasturing ground during the middle part of the day. So here it's described, "Your darling child, Yashoda, has festively enhanced his attire with a jasmine garland, and he is now playing along the Yamuna in the company of the cows and cowherd boys, amusing his dear companions. The gentle breeze honors him with its soothing fragrance of sandalwood, while the various demigods standing on all sides offer their music, their singing, and their gifts of tribute." And Krishna used to take 100,000 calves out every day, and he used to know each and every one of them by name. And when it was time to go back in the afternoon to Vrindavan and to bring the cows back to their mothers, he wanted to make sure that there were no stragglers left behind. So he would call each one, and as each one showed himself present and accounted for, Krishna would count it off on his string of 108 beads. Because Vrindavan is a rural village and depends upon rainfall for agricultural production, they used to have an annual worship ceremony to Indra, the Lord of Rains. But in order, again, to accent the importance of cows, Krishna convinced his father, Nanda Maharaj, to take all the paraphernalia which was meant for the Indra Puja and instead worship the cows. He said the cows are even more central to our economy, so we should worship them. Indra became so incensed at what he perceived was the impertinence of Krishna that he caused a devastating rainfall to come down in Vrindavan. Rain was coming like pillars, water levels were rising by the minute, temperatures were dropping. But Krishna lifted a huge mountain called Govardhan on the little finger of his left hand and held it as a sheltering umbrella for 7 days while the rain came down. All the cows, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, came in under that umbrella where they were warm, they were dry, they sang songs and played games for an entire week. At the end of the week, Indra realized that he'd been offensive, that he'd been impertinent, so he came and bowed down before Krishna, and he called the Sarabi cow from the heavenly planets, and the Sarabi cow gave Abhishekam to Krishna. If you come here during Janmashtami or any special occasion, we'll bring a small brass deity out, and the pujaris will bathe that deity with milk and yogurt and clarified butter and everything else. So that's a special ceremony reserved for special occasions. So the Sarabi cow, by way of making Indra's apology to Krishna, from its udder, he sprayed Krishna with milk and the Abhishekam was performed. At that same time, and during that same festive occasion, it usually happens during harvest time, October, November, and it occurs at the same time as Diwali. There's a corollary festival with Govardhan Puja called Anukuta. And Anukuta literally means mountains of food. And here you see a picture of some of the food that's offered this time. It's basically about the same time as Thanksgiving. Every culture, after the agricultural growing season is finished and the harvesting and the storage and the canning is all done, then people are basically not going to do much for the next few months. So they celebrate the end of the work season, the end of the agricultural season with a big festival. And usually they have a big feast. And we call it Thanksgiving. In India they call it Anukut. Now, the point I'm making is that most of those items that are pictured there are made from the milk of a cow. 90% of the things that we find tasty, delectable, yummy, yum, 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 come from milk, which produces butter, which produces cheese, which produces sour cream, which produces cream cheese, which produces ice cream, so on and so forth. The list goes on and on. Not only is that, but there's good nutrition in milk as well. Here Prabhupada says there's a miracle in milk, for it contains all the necessary vitamins to sustain human physiological condition for higher achievements. Brahminical culture can advance only when man is educated to develop the quality of goodness. And for this, there is a prime necessity of food prepared with milk, fruit, and grains. At this point, someone might be asking, well, what about homogenized, pasteurized, watered-down milk that we buy in the grocery store? And I'll be the first to agree with you, not good. Not good. Best milk is raw milk. And of all the different types of raw milk, the best type of raw milk is milk from cows that know they're not going to be killed. Prabhupada said the cow is intelligent. She knows when she's going to be slaughtered or not. So there's a difference between what we buy in the store and what milk ideally can and should be. And I suppose you could go all over the United States of America and you would be hard-pressed to find even one cow, beef cow or dairy cow, who is going to die of old age. There are 4 billion animals slaughtered in this country every year, and a significant proportion of those are cows. So we have never tasted, probably in our lives, unless we've gone to India, most likely, the milk of a cow which is protected, which is a member of the family, which is happy. In Krishna's time, the cows were so happy, knowing that they were protected, that the fields were moistened by the milk overflowing from their milk bags. Nowadays, the calf is taken away from the mother at an early age, and she's artificially milked. But a cow who has her calf by her side, who is happy, who is protected, produces profuse quantities of milk. So much so, in older days, that the whole pasturing ground was moistened with the milk which was seeping out of the udder of the cow. The milk is the most important animal for developing the human body to perfection. The body can be maintained by any kind of foodstuff, but cow's milk is particularly essential for developing the finer tissues of the human brain so that one can understand the intricacies of transcendental knowledge. Someone might say, well, what about goat's milk? What about buffalo milk? And they have nutritional value, but only cow's milk is considered to be able to develop finer tissues within the brain by which one can understand spiritual subject matter. We read about Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami was present when Sukadeva Goswami spoke the 20,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Pariksit during the last 7 days of his life. Now Suta Goswami, after having heard the entire 20,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam one time, then traveled to another assembly of sages at Maimashran, and he repeated the whole thing, word for word. That was because he subsisted on milk. That was because he had good memory and good brain, which comes only from cow's milk itself. Here are some of the products that come from the cow. In America, we say dog is man's best friend. But I don't think the contribution of the dog can match that of the cow. I don't think the generosity of the dog can match that of the cow. She eats grass, which is freely available everywhere. On the one end, she eats the grass, and then from another part of her anatomy comes milk, from which we get cheese and butter and sour cream and yogurt and ice cream and all the tasty things that we like to eat. I thought it'd be fun just to take one of the 28 states of India and put a graph here, all the favorite sweets from that state that are made of dairy products. So this is Orissa, it's on the East Coast, and there could be 27 other charts just like this, of Rajasthan, Bengal, Gujarat, Kerala, Karnataka, Uttar Pradesh, Andhra Pradesh, Madhya Pradesh, each one of which would have their own favorite sweets. So there's an unlimited variety of products that can be made from dairy products. Pancha Govya. Pancha means five, Govya means cow. There are 5 ingredients which are essential for any ritualistic purificatory ceremony, and they all come from the cow. Milk, yogurt, ghee, which is clarified butter, cow dung, and cow urine. Now in the Vedic scriptures, it says that the dung of an animal is impure. If you contact the dung of any animal, you must immediately go and scrupulously take your bath with soap in order to counteract the impurities. But the exception is cow dung. Cow dung is considered pure. If you're out somewhere and you get a cut and you don't have any other form of antiseptic, you can actually smear cow dung on that cut and it will kill the germs and act antiseptically. So in the early morning hours in India, when the fog is rising and the sun is coming up, you'll see all kinds of teens and preteens going around finding the dried up cow patties, and they'll stack them on their heads, maybe even as much as a dozen, take them home. Those are used for fuel. They're a very nice, slow-burning fuel. They don't smell bad. Most dung smells bad. Cow dung smells good, and it's good for burning. And then the wet patties, they smear them on the inside of their huts for insulation, so that it keeps the hut cool when the summer's hot and it keeps it warm during the chill of winter. This is just reiterating what we said. Everything that comes from a cow, not only its dung, its urine, but its milk, but even if a cow has a runny nose, that's considered pure. Like now, it's always the season for colds now, because it's May, and some of the days are chilly, and some of the days are warm, or the nights are chilly and the days are warm. So it's easy with all these fluctuations of temperatures to get a runny nose, to get sinus congestion. I've been suffering from it for 2 weeks. Brian's also got a little bit of it. So we have to be very careful not to sneeze in someone's face, when we blow our nose, to dispose of the tissues, to very carefully wash our hands, because these things are all contaminated. But the running nose of a cow is not contaminated. It's pure. Everything that comes out of a cow's body is pure. And here are some of the products that are sold from our Mayapur branch, where they have a big cow protection program. And the cow protection program pays for itself because they sell all these medicinal byproducts of the cow. Prabhupada says here, agriculture is still the mainstay of India's economy. Cow breeding and cow preservation are integral to it. 75% of Indians live in villages and derive the greatest benefits from cows and bullocks. Despite the compulsions of modernism, tractors are not suitable for Indian land holdings. In the United States, the land available to each person is around 14 acres. In India, it's around 0.7 acre. A tractor consumes diesel, creates pollution, doesn't eat grass, nor produce dung for manure. So for Indian conditions, plowing is still ideal. And Albert Einstein, the great scientist, he wrote to Sir C.V. Raman, "Tell the people of India that if they want to survive and show the world the path to survival, then they should forget about tractors and preserve their ancient tradition of plowing." A clinical dietitian's chart will show that beef, with 22% protein, ranks far below vegetable products like soybean, which has 43% protein, groundnut, which has 31% protein, or pulses, which have 24% protein. Now, it's important to realize that protein is synthesized on the plant level. Neither animals nor human beings can synthesize protein. So when people say, "Where do you get your protein from?" Protein comes from plant sources. Now when the animal eats plants and then you get your protein from the animal, you're getting second-class protein. You're not getting the best quality protein. So of that 22% of protein which is in meat, only about 8% is available for assimilation by your tissues, because it's not a high class of protein. But when you get your protein directly from plant sources, not only do some of these plants have more protein to start with, but you get up to 22% assimilation. Now, it's important to note that as Vaishnavas, following the culture that we follow, we don't eat any of these soy products or ground nut or pulses, because they have not only they have too much protein, but there's too high a rate of assimilation. The human body only needs about 8% protein for the normal person, 10% protein for an athlete or a bodybuilder. A potato has 8 to 10% protein. Milk, a whole grain breads. Nobody is suffering from lack of protein. Not here, not anywhere else. But a lot of people are suffering from too much protein. When you get more than 8 to 10% of protein in your diet, it puts a lot of pressure on your kidneys and your liver to eliminate that. And what happens when excess protein is eliminated, it leaches calcium from your body. That's why in America, although we eat a lot of dairy products, we should be getting a lot of calcium. Osteoporosis, or porosity of the bones, is epidemic amongst older people. Once you speak of older people, people at the ages of 45 and 50 are showing porosity of their bones because they've been getting too much protein their whole life, and so that protein has been leached out. So we don't even eat these like tofu and soy products. We get our protein from more natural sources. Here it says to procure 1 kilogram of beef or flesh, it takes 7 kilograms of crops and 7,000 kilograms of water. This contributes to water shortage in regions where beef is prevalent. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals, and a fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there's enough milk, enough grains, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do the people need cinemas, houses of prostitution, and slaughterhouses? What is the need of an artificial, luxurious life of cinema, cars, radio, flesh, and hotels? Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling individually and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory and the war fields at the whims of politicians? It's funny because they have the National Day of Prayer every year in Provo, and various representatives of various religious denominations are asked to speak. Mormons, Jews, Native Americans. And Linda Walton, who organizes it, generally asks me to come back and speak year after year. And I often wonder why she asked me, because the audience is all mediators, and I always find some way to stick it to them. You know? So this year the theme was the golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. So I said, what does it mean? What does others mean? It means those who are different from us. I don't think there's any particular virtue in being nice to people that are cool like you. But others mean other genders, other ethnicities, other economic statuses, other races, and how about this? Other species. Do unto other species as you would have them do unto you. Said one of the commonest arguments in favor of meat eating is that we've been doing it for thousands and thousands of years. Yes, and also for thousands and thousands of years, our history is punctuated with war, bloodshed, and strife. So there's a correlation between meat eating and wars. Correlation doesn't prove causality. It doesn't prove that meat eating causes wars. But the correlation is so striking that Leo Tolstoy, for instance, said, as long as we have slaughterhouses, we'll have wars. Even Joseph Smith said, until man becomes harmless before the animal creation and gives up his vicious disposition to eat their flesh, that time will never come when the lion lies down with the lamb and the suckling child will play with the serpent. There's a story about Narada Muni, who travels here and there and throughout the universe. And he met four people, and each one he wanted to bless him in the best way that he could. So the first person he met was a yogi, and he had nothing to do with the world, nothing to do with society. He completely detached himself from all temporal things. So in order to benedict him, Narada Muni said, die. Die because you have nothing to stay here for. Go and get your moksha. Go and get your salvation. Next person he came to was a king, and the king was mired in hedonism and sensuality. He had a whole harem full of wives. He would drink alcohol. He would gamble. So in order to bless the king, Narada Muni said, live a long life. Like people used to say, long live the king. Because as soon as you die, you're going to become a dog. So live a long life. He came to a devotee. Devotee was eating Krishna prasadam, sharing the philosophy of Krishna, observing the festivals, chanting Hare Krishna. Narada Muni said, live or die, it doesn't matter, because what you're doing now, when you go to the spiritual world, you'll be doing the same thing. So live or die, it's the same thing, it doesn't matter. Finally, the fourth person that Narada Muni came to was a butcher. He said, I cannot wish that you go on living because every day that you live, you're killing more cows. I cannot wish that you die because as soon as you die, for every hair on the back of a cow that you kill, you're going to have to go to the slaughterhouse and find out what it's like to be on the other end of the fork. So don't live, don't die. The butcher really had him stumped because Narada Muni couldn't see any way that his present or his future would ever be auspicious. In fact, in Hindi and Sanskrit, when you say the word for meat, mans, and it's two words, ma and sa. Ma means me and sa means him. So when you say the word for meat, you're reminded that what you do to this living entity in this life, he has the permission to come back and do that to you in the next life. There's nothing unjust in this. There's a balance to it. One of the most often commented upon pieces of art in the Spanish Fort Temple is a picture of a man with a cow's head, and he's got an axe, and he's about to come down on the neck of a cow with a man's head. So all the kids in tour, they say, well, what does that mean? We say, karma, what goes around comes around. What the man does to the cow in this life, the cow gets to come back as a man and do it to the cow in the next life. A cow's calf is not only beautiful to look at, but also gives satisfaction to the cow. And so she delivers as much milk as possible. But in the Kali Yuga, the calves are separated from the cows as early as possible for purposes which may not be mentioned in these pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The cow stands with tears in her eyes. The low-class milkman draws milk from the cow artificially, and when there is no milk, the cow is sent to be slaughtered. These greatly sinful acts are responsible for all the troubles in the present society. In India, one means of charity, which is still practiced by wealthy people, is to donate money for the purpose of land and the establishment of what's called goshalas. Go means cows, and shala means reserves, or places where elderly cows who can no longer plow the field or give milk can go and live out their lives and die a natural death. First time I went to India, I don't know if Sharma can verify this, first time I went to India was in 1979. And when I would wander into the Bata shoe stores, there were leather shoes. But in those days, each pair of shoes had a little sticker on it, like we have on the apples and oranges everywhere in the grocery store. And it said, leather was obtained from an animal that died a natural death. Do you remember that? You remember they used to have those little stickers? Because the consumers had scruples. They had concerns. I don't want to pay my money thinking that the cow was killed to get me a pair of shoes. I don't want that karma. So the shoe companies would reassure them that the animal died a natural death. And after all, every cow is going to die. So you can get leather, you can even get meat if you want, by allowing them to die a natural death. And that was, those stickers were still there when I went back to India in 73, 75, 78, 79. But I noticed in the 80s they disappeared. So I don't even want to begin to speculate on what that might pretend. ISKCON, which stands for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we have 500 temples throughout the world. And especially in India, they have a vigorous program of cow protection. We're not even doing 1/1000th of what we would like to do to protect the cows. We have a long way to go. But still, we are the single largest organization in the world to run the maximum number of goshalas. Speaking at the Vishwamangala Go Grama Yatras program in 2009 in Hyderabad, Mr. Uma Maheshwara Rao, who is the president of the India-wide Cow Protection Program, expressed his deep appreciation to the Hare Krishna movement's effort in cow protection, not only in India, but across the world. So that concludes our Mother's Day presentation. And I don't think anywhere in Salt Lake City, or maybe not anywhere in America, would anyone have heard this particular type of a presentation, a sermon given on Mother's Day. So thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for your kind attention. Go Mataji Ki Jai.